Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Titans Monday on a Friday. Reaction Monday as we are going back to yesterday's preseason game against the Baltimore Ravens. Trevor Maddich, who normally joins us on a Tuesday, Trevor's going to join us now here on a Friday. And I said to Trevor, I was like, let's break down the Titans game. So, Trevor, you watched it yesterday. Trevor Maddich presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Let's start with Malik Willis, because the fans were excited with some of the things they saw from Malik Willis. You broke it down. What was your initial takeaway from his first NFL career performance?
Well, he did well what we knew he could do well, which is scramble, make plays off schedule with his legs mostly. When it comes to the art of quarterbacking, I think he established the baseline that we can see if he gets better at now. That baseline was largely awful in a lot of ways, but it's his first preseason game. The key isn't how he did against the Ravens yesterday. The key is what he learns from it, how he gets it onto the practice field, and then takes those lessons into the next preseason game. Now, I've got a lot of criticism about him. And some compliments, but I want to be sure that people understand that I'm not criticizing the young man. By all accounts, he's a great guy. He works hard. He's coachable, all those different things. These are parts of his game that the coaches will be looking at and that he'll be looking at that he needs to improve if he's going to contribute to this team this year or ever.
Well, let's start with some of those criticisms. You said you thought the baseline play was awful. In what way?
He didn't see things a lot of the time. He would take off and run when he should have stayed in the pocket. He would move in the pocket, and then instead of keeping his eyes downfield as he moved in the pocket, as soon as he had to move off his spot, he would just absolutely take off and run. And these were some real problems and some things that I think the coach was very frustrated about. For example, there was a first and 10 at the 26. Where he scrambled, gained about 2 yards. He ended up having pressure up the middle, right? If he would have stepped up and to the right, he had Hassan Haskins on the scramble drill right in front of him, right in the middle of the field, going straight up the field, and he could have hit him for a nice gain. But instead, as soon as he started to slide up, he pulled that ball down, he took his eyes down, and he ran. He saw what he saw for the first instant of the play, and then instead of buying time, moving in the pocket, manipulating the pocket like you see the great quarterbacks do, you saw him see he didn't like what he saw at first and then take off and run. And this is what I think frustrated the coaches, because there were so many times when he ran and sometimes looked really good when he ran, but he should have solved the problem with his arm and with his mind instead of his legs. And that's what I say about now next time, he needs to get better at that. There's a lot of examples, though, and we can go through his performance play by play. There's just a whole bunch of plays that were like that.
Mm-hmm. How hard do you think it will be for Malik to improve from 1 week to the next?
I don't think it'll be hard, because a lot of times it's just a matter of patience. For example, there was a play first quarter. It was third and five. And he threw incomplete to the right after scrambling around a bit.
Sure.
But this play was set up to be easy for him.
Was this the one where he overthrew Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, that was on the right sideline. I think it was Fitzpatrick, yeah. But the thing is, he should never have gone there to begin with, because the play was set up to be an easy read for Willis, but Willis didn't have the patience or the understanding to look at it. What happened was, there were three wide receivers to the left and a single wide receiver to the right. It was Josh Malone over to the right? He was sort of split out. So he's a single receiver to the right, let's put it that way. And the three receivers on the left, third and five now, they cleared out. They ran out of there, and they took all the defenders with them. Now, the left side of the field, short, within about 5 or 10 yards, was completely clear. So Malone on the right ran up 5 yards and cut across the field on a drag against man coverage, and he came open going into the left. The problem is that when you look at Malik Willis's head, where he was looking, first he looked over to the left where all those guys ran the clearing routes. Then his eye scanned the middle, and his eye scanned Malone crossing to the left into all that empty space. But then, instead of throwing it to Malone, he kept looking to the right. Then he got some pressure, so he had to scramble, and then he threw it, and it was incomplete. All he had to do was understand the one thing that the coach designed for him on that play to make it an easy read. I want you to look at the drag coming across with the shallow crossing route, 5-yard crossing route, from right to left into the empty space that we're going to manufacture for you. Look there first. If he's open, throw it to him. If not, go to plan B. Well, he didn't do that. He looked away like he didn't even understand the concept of the pattern of the route concepts that were called to make it easy for him. That's the kind of thing that's easy for him to get better at, because he didn't need on that play to make complex reads of the entire defense, didn't need to make a complex throw. All he needed to do was understand, look at this guy first, here's why, and then wait to see what happens to him before you do anything else. And I think he'll get better at that, look at the first thing first, because a lot of times the first thing he was supposed to look at, he didn't look at.
Trevor, what do you make of Mike Vrabel after the game was asked about taking Malik out in the start, the first drive of the second half? Here's what Mike Vrabel said.
You brought Logan in the middle of the drive. Is that because you want to put him in kind of a scenario?
That no, that's because I wanted Malik to throw the ball, and he wasn't, so I put Logan in.
What'd you make of that, and what'd you make of Vrabel saying it publicly?
Yeah, I'm fine with him saying it publicly. I mean, he says that publicly about a lot of people.
Sure.
And, yeah, I mean, perform, and he'll say nice things about you, or he'll say nothing. A lot of times, if he just says nothing, then you're in pretty good shape, right? But the fact that he said it, I'm fine with. The fact that he pulled Malik Willis out for that reason, I'm also fine with. Because remember, he missed a lot of easy, simple reads that were designed specifically to give him confidence and get him going in the first half. Just missed it entirely. Mm-hmm. So at halftime, they're saying, okay, here's what we want you to do. You're bugging out and running too much. We want you to throw the ball more. Now, there's a couple reasons for that. One is that they already know he can run. If he's going to help this team, he needs to be able to solve more problems with his mind and his arm than his legs. So he knew coming out for that next series, they wanted him to throw the ball. So on that big 17-yard scramble, which was his last play of the game, all the fans loved it, man. He bugged out to the left. He scrambled. He made some people miss. It was just fantastic. And it was terrible based on what the coaches wanted him to do. Now, he dropped back to pass on that play. He looked to the right. I couldn't see from the TV, if there was a receiver open to the right. We really needed all 22 or a wider angle. They didn't show it. But as he looked back to the left, he saw that the left tackle was getting beat and he was about to get hit. So he spun out, lost some ground, and then scrambled out to the left, deeper than he was in the pocket. He got all the way out. Now there's nobody out there chasing him. He's got no pressure right now. So he's running to the left towards the sideline. Then he turns it up, and he's got a long ways to go to get up to the line of scrimmage. He had 3 days to pull up, get his eyes downfield, and find somebody on the scramble drill. Instead, man, he was going to show how he could run. And instead of using all that space that he created with his ability to scramble with the purpose of creating time to then reset, look downfield, and try to solve the problem with his arm, he just took off and ran. And I think that's what Coach Vrabel was talking about. Yeah, he couldn't stay in the pocket any longer than he did, but even on that scramble, he had the ability to pull up and look down the field, and he didn't do that. And that's what he wanted him to do. So one of the reasons was that they needed to see him progress there. But the second reason is one of the positions of need is receiver. They need to see what these receivers can do. And even if the balls aren't on time and they're not good, they need to see which receivers are going to fight for those footballs. They're going to make plays anyway. And if the quarterback is always running in a preseason game, how in the world do you get reps for the receivers? And how in the world do you evaluate receivers? And so I think that also was part of the frustration of Coach Vrabel, that he went out there on a play that he could have off the scramble, pulled up and thrown it to give one of those receivers a chance, Hey, he took off and ran anyway. Well, so what? You know, it's a preseason game. There's a lot going on besides whether or not Malik Willis can run.
Trevor Maddox is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, where experience matters. What do you make of Titans fans who want a quarterback battle for the backup spot behind Tannehill between Malik Willis and Logan Woodside?
Well, I think they can have that battle. I think it's fine. And really, it's not a battle so much as it is Logan Woodside's job to lose. Malik Willis just doesn't know enough mentally to be able to apply much of the offense right now. And as good as he is as a runner, if that's all he can do, defenses are going to take that away and they're going to force him to win with his arm. And he's going to be in trouble if he doesn't get better at some of those things. Woodside, theoretically, has a better ability right now than Willis to unlock the potential of the other skill people on the offense. In other words, he can get the ball distributed where it needs to go and let those guys be the stars, right? Well, if he doesn't do that, then we come back to a different equation. Because if Woodside is not distributing efficiently, even though he's not a big playmaker, at least distributing efficiently, then we have to come back and say, well, is Willis the guy then because he can run? Because Woodside is not going to make plays. At least Willis can go out and make plays with his legs. And if Woodside is not enabling the rest of the skill people like he should with his knowledge of the offense, then his position as the backup quarterback is tenuous. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. I thought he made some mistakes, Woodside did, in that game. But then again, I thought that it wasn't, you know, the numbers, which were not good for Woodside, passing numbers, two interceptions, stuff like that, it wasn't all his fault. Sometimes the receiver was in the wrong spot. I think the first interception, the receiver ran the wrong route, and Woodside put the ball where it needed to go. The second interception, Woodside was days late throwing the ball. He had a receiver wide open on a stop route, on a little curl. And I don't know if the receiver was supposed to attack back to the ball more than he did, but I know when he turned around and presented his numbers, that ball needed to be there right now. Instead, he waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and then finally the ball arrived. So part receiver, but part Woodside too, taking way too long to throw that ball. That's where Woodside needs to win this job against Willis. He needs to be better at unlocking the potential of the rest of the guys around him than Willis is as a runner.
Trevor Maddox is with us. On the other side, the offensive line. We saw Petit Frere out there. We saw Dylan Radins, Jamarco Jones. Aaron Brewer played center, even though he's been playing left guard the whole time. We'll get Trevor's thoughts on that, plus the skill position players. What did he take away from the lack of seeing Treylon Burks make plays or Caleb Farley? We'll get into that with Trevor. Trevor Maddox, of course, is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. The NFL Week 1 odds are out, and now is the time to try FanDuel because, well, you can get in the action early. Right now, new FanDuel Sports customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. They got tons of futures out there, like you can bet on Derrick Henry winning the rushing title, or will the Rams repeat at plus 1,100? The answer to that, by the way, is no. You've also got win totals, Titans over, under. After last night, wouldn't affect me one way or another, but you can go with that. And you can even start building out same-game parlays. Just sign up using the promo code JGM, place your first bet, and FanDuel will give you up to $1,000 back in free bets if you don't win. There's no better place to get ready for the football season than on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, and my official sports app, as well as the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use the promo code JGM. 21 and older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply and see full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. Stillman and Company, Titans preseason game number one is in the books, which means we got Trevor Maddox with us to break it down. And the offensive line battle, Petit Frere versus Dylan Radins. And how about Mike Vrabel? Because we all were going to analyze who starts in the preseason game, who doesn't start, what's that mean, who's got the upper hand at right tackle. And Vrabel goes out and he starts them both. How about that? Petit Frere starts at left tackle. Radins starts at right tackle. Trevor Maddox is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trev, let's start right there. Offensive line, that's your bread and butter. You've played that in the league for a decade. What did you make of what you saw out of the young Titans offensive linemen last night?
I saw some good things, and I saw some things to be very concerned about. You know, one of the good things was Corey Levin, actually at center, and I think he played guard too. I saw him bail out Dylan Radin's on a play. He was surprisingly steady. He wasn't spectacular, but he wasn't getting tossed around. It didn't look like he was busting a lot of assignments, and it didn't look like his guy was being terribly disruptive. So that was good. I thought that Nicholas Petit-Frere at left tackle, where he started the game, was kind of iffy, like quite iffy for a variety of reasons. For example, early on, we had the fumble of Julius Chestnut, right? And on a run to the left. Well, Petit-Frere was at the point of attack on that play. He had a combo block on the defensive end with the tight end. But the tight end came inside of Petit-Frere and got 3 yards of penetration straight up the field right at the point of attack. Chestnut, to his credit, was able to juke him and kind of still get up to the line of scrimmage. But by that point, he was completely off of his rhythm. And when defenders came in, he wasn't squeezing that ball like he should have. Now, he should have been squeezing that ball better. But then again, that was just not a good play by the young left tackle. But then when Petit-Frere kicked over to right tackle after a few series, he actually played quite well there. I was actually a little surprised at how steady and solid he was at the right tackle position, especially in one-on-one pass protection. I wasn't going against the best of pass rushers. But at the same time, he beat them. He was in the right position with his sets. He was pretty good with his hands. He was able to drop anchor on the bull rush. And he gave me some hope that maybe he might be able to be a serviceable right tackle this year and maybe grow into something more than serviceable. So I was very encouraged by Levin and by Petit-Frere when he moved over to the right.
Let's get to the bad then.
Yeah, the bad, North Dakota State, the Bison, they weren't well represented yesterday by Dylan Radins. He started the game at right tackle and basically got tossed around. I mean, on the opening series for the Titans on third down, they left Radins on an island on the right side. He had a pass rusher coming in from lined up very wide. There was no tight end out there. There was no help. And this happens often in preseason games where coaches will leave players on an island, whether it's a pass blocker or a corner on a wide receiver or a linebacker having to cover a running back in coverage. They'll leave them on an island to see what they can do. So Radins' first opportunity, he took his set on that guy all by himself on a big old island, and the pass rusher gave him a club with his inside arm and bent Radins over sideways away from the line of scrimmage. I mean, just about tossed him onto his ear. I'm surprised Radins didn't go down. That's where Corey Levin, I think it was Levin, bailed him out, right? But that wasn't good. That's one play. But there were so many other plays where Radins actually got his man blocked from the standpoint of the guy didn't get to the quarterback, but it looked incredibly crazy. Radin's arms and legs just spread every which way. You know, he wasn't punching, he was catching. So he was the punching bag. He wasn't turning the defender into the punching bag. There was nothing to fear if you're a pass rusher when you rush Radins, because he's not going to harm you in any way. He's just going to sort of get his hands on you and try to envelop you and catch you and then try to drop anchor. Well, a lot of times he'll do that, but instead of dropping anchor or before he drops anchor, he'll end up getting pushed back with both feet in the air. Now he's airborne. And then he puts both feet down. He's able to drop anchor enough to where the guy doesn't get to the quarterback. Well, you go against starting NFL pass rushers, and you're going to get absolutely annihilated. And so he just did not inspire in me confidence that he's at a place where the foundation is when he can build from and become a starting right tackle, where Petit-Frere kind of showed that foundation a little bit at that position. Now, it's one game. It wasn't against the Ravens starters. There's a lot that they can both get better at. But that's what I saw in this first game, and I expected better out of Dylan Radin.
If John Robinson asked you, Trevor, you played in the league, you've played offensive line, you've got all that experience, do I need to be looking for a veteran tackle that may be able to come in here and start in a pinch at right tackle, what would you say to him after what you saw last
night? Yeah, my sense is that he is scouring rosters for potential cuts on the last day, and that he thinks that, this is my sense, that he thinks that their starting right tackle is not on the roster right now. And that's why it surprises me that they didn't address this in free agency before training camp started, for goodness sake. Now, Petit Frere is the leader in the clubhouse in my position, and in my opinion, at that position. But if I'm John Robinson, I'm thinking I got to count on Petit Frere, or I got to bring in somebody that somebody else didn't want to keep as my best option at right tackle. Now, the good news is the right tackle doesn't have to be a superstar. He has to be serviceable. But serviceable first means he has to be a run blocker to the degree that he won't get tossed, that his man isn't standing at the point of attack unblocked, and Derrick Henry has to run through that guy every time. So it's better if you have a big old road grader over there, but if you got a guy that can just keep his feet, then at least Henry has a chance to run through arm tackles. And that's really what I liked about Corey Levin, especially at center, that he kept his feet and he gave the running backs a chance. And I saw Ravens be okay on that on the run. I saw Petit Frere be a little better at right tackle. But beyond that, then you got to be able to protect the quarterback. And my goodness gracious, they might be in some trouble over there if Ravens are starting.
Trevor Maddich with us. What did you make of the young guys? Let's start with the receivers because they didn't really do much. Burks, McMath did have a nice catch, and McMath has had a nice camp. Phillips and Okonkwo, what did you make of that group, and were you disappointed in Burks' lack of production last night?
Well, it's hard to say why Burks only had one catch. Mm-hmm. Why he only had one target. No catches, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a ball in the end zone that he jumped up, was kind of underthrown, yeah. But probably could have made a better play on it.
Well, I think it's more than that. When I saw that play, I was disgusted.
Really?
When that ball's in the air, I don't want my receivers to have the mindset of receive. Okay, I'm going to go, and if the ball comes to me, I'm going to receive it. No. You have to have the mindset as a receiver of a junkyard dog. That's my ball. It's the last bone in the junkyard, and I'm fighting over that. It's mine. And I want to see that fight. Sometimes you'll win it, sometimes you won't, but I want to see anger. I want to see viciousness. I want to see a proprietary desire to go after what's yours. And that ball was poorly thrown by Logan Woodside. It was thrown too far inside. It was underthrown a little bit. But at the same time, Burks was there and got his hands on it, right? And the defender was there to kind of break it up. But it looked to me like Burks went over there and he just kind of went up and tried to get it. And I didn't see the fight that I saw out of Burks in SEC games in similar situations. So, you know, and the coach, when Mike Vrabel, you know, talked about him after the game, he seemed to be quite disappointed. And so a receiver can not catch a ball during a game but still have a good game as a receiver if he runs the right routes and has the right assignments and does his part in the overall pass pattern. The ball doesn't come his way, it doesn't come his way. But the impression I got from what Coach Vrabel said was that there was something lacking with either assignments or technique or precision beyond just that one play about Treylon Burks, and I think that's one of the reasons that he played into the fourth quarter. Well, you know, coach is sending a message, hey, you got a long way to go, and you need to perform better here. So the fact that he said that he has to have a good week of practice this week, and he put it in those terms, I thought that was pretty astonishing.
Trev, last one for you. The two-minute drill, Malik Willis had two back-to-back plays. I love the throw that he had to start that drive outside the numbers on a rope to Mason Kinsey. And then they take the timeout. They've got one more timeout left trying to get points. I know it's his first game, but he ends up taking a sack, and everybody knows the quarterback can't take that sack. Throw the ball away. That I found to be frustrating, to have one play followed by the next one. What did you make of that scenario, and what does that tell you about Willis's development?
Jared, I think with that first play, we saw the physical potential. Because there was pressure right up the middle. That ball was all arm. I mean, all arm to Mason Kinsey, and it was on a rope. I mean, it was pretty astonishing, the physical talent that throw demonstrated. But then the next play, there's 28 seconds to go. They're trying to get down into field goal range. They have one timeout. And Willis ended up rolling out to the right. There's nothing there. He's standing literally 2 yards away from the sideline. The pressure is coming. He can see the pressure coming. He's looking downfield. He's looking downfield. Now I'm thinking, look, throw it away or step out of bounds. You got to stop the clock right now. You only have one timeout left. And if you're trying to get a field goal, you need to maintain that timeout with 28 seconds to go. You need to maintain that timeout so you can still work the middle of the field. Well, he just stood there, two paces inside of the sideline, and let the pressure get to him and sack him. They had to give up their last timeout on that. Now, that is a good learning play for him, but it was an indication to the coaches that he didn't have the situational awareness that he needs in order to be able to perform well. And then with 16 seconds to go, it was third and 16, right? Mm-hmm. He actually had self-induced pressure and threw the ball away. There were three guys rushing, right? They were all blocked. So Willis doesn't see anything because there's eight guys in coverage now, doesn't see anything in the beginning. So he steps up in the pocket, even though he didn't have to, and he goes to the right where the defensive end was being blocked by Nicholas Petitfrere. Pretty good block right there. But Willis ran over there and right into the guy. And it was sort of a miracle that he was able to escape a sack there, scramble a bit more to the right, and threw the ball away. So these are situations of pocket awareness, clock awareness, and game awareness that he struggled with in this preseason game. But it's the first preseason game. So now the key is not to rain on the guy because he missed so many opportunities in this game. Now we have a baseline. And next week we can see him in a two-minute drill. And we can see how he manages the clock and the timeouts better. Next time, we can see how he manages the pocket a bit better and keeps his eyes downfield instead of moving off a spot and just taking off and running. Next time, we'll be able to see whether or not he improves at these things. And so I think there's reason to be excited, but there's a lot of pressure on him to show improvement next week.
Trevor Maddich is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics when experience matters. Trev, great breakdown, great insight. We really appreciate it. Nobody knows that we talk to the offensive line like you do. Great to chat, as always. Great stuff. Appreciate you, Trev.
Thanks, Sharon.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program, as he always does. Also had the nicest, kindest words to say about me to my parents. I don't know if he was just sucking up, but I know my parents greatly appreciated that. And greatly appreciate Trevor, so there is that as well. 615-737-1025. We got to discuss what Trevor just said about the offensive line. Specifically, Raidens. We got to discuss that, because I heard that, and I was like, whoa. Isn't it kind of obvious? We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday, 1025-1063 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be good to watch some of these guys in the preseason games and watch them continue to improve in practice, but you know, I think all the players that are playing at those spots, Dylan Raidens, Nick Petitfrere, the rookie at the tackle spot, Aaron Brewer at the guard spot, Jamarco Jones at the guard spot, Jordan Roos at the guard. I mean, all those guys have improved throughout the course of camp. Certainly with the rookie Nick and with Jamarco, two totally different offenses. So I have seen their fundamentals and their technique improve. I like the way their play style, their finish, their effort throughout the course of the play has improved. It's going to be fun to watch. And Dylan Raidens has really done a nice job, over the last couple of practices stringing some plays together.
That was John Robinson 1 week ago saying, by the way, Dylan Raidens, he's done a little bit of a nice job. You guys know Trevor Maddich, who just joined us on the program. You guys know Trevor. I mean, look, I love Trevor with all my heart. I seriously do. I believe Trevor is a glass half full guy. Fair, Ian?
Pretty fair.
Okay. After what we know about Raidens, last year he couldn't even be active for the Bengals game. Vrabel said at the combine this year he was not ready to play. But his charge for the offensive line coach, Keith Carter, was to have Raidens ready to play by the start of the season. They have given him every opportunity to win the right tackle job. Now, Nicholas Petitfrere in practice is with the first team a little bit more, in my opinion, than Dylan Raidens is. And you just heard Trevor Maddich's breakdown of Dylan Raidens, which was, honestly, maybe the harshest I have ever heard him talk about somebody on the field. And I know Trevor doesn't like doing that. Although I guess maybe Treylon Burks, being out of shape for minicamp. And then when Treylon Burks didn't go up for the football and Trevor said he was disgusted by that, maybe a little bit harsher. But Trevor made it obvious to me there, Ian, that he doesn't think that Raiden's can play right tackle in the NFL. That fair to say?
He seems pretty skeptical, I think, of him. You know, I don't know. Maybe there's still room for improvement, but early on here, it's not looking good for a big impact.
I think it's after what I heard from Trevor there. And I told you guys that when I watch the offensive linemen and I see them in the individual drills, that I just – Petit Frere's better. Like, I just watched him. I'm like, he's just better. And then I see that. Then I see the Titans dropping Dylan Raiden's snaps with Petit Frere when they're not dropping Jamarco – or they're not dropping Aaron Brewer's reps with the first team in favor of Jamarco Jones, which they've also said is a camp battle. And I'm like, yeah, Titans, no. I'm like, yep, Titans, no. And I got to be – it's time to admit it. The Dylan Raiden's experiment is over. Bust. That pick's not going to work out. And I think Trevor brought up a great point when he said that he believes that John Robinson thinks that his starting right tackle is not on the roster. And that John Robinson, instead of looking at the market right now and seeing who is the best available right tackle to go sign to put out there, like the Jets did this week by giving Dwayne Brown $11 million over the next 2 years, Robinson is going to wait for somebody to get cut. My guess is Robinson is either waiting for Dennis Kelly or David Questenberry to get cut. And the second those guys get cut, the Titans will sign them before week one, and that guy will be playing right tackle for the Titans. Maybe not Kelly, because Kelly's kind of old, or maybe because his brother's on the coaching staff. But honestly, I think that's where they are. Now, Petit Frere, and Trevor said that Petit Frere showed that he might be able to play right tackle. And I could see the Titans bringing Questenberry back if he gets cut in Buffalo, bringing Questenberry back and hoping that Petit Frere can start and having Questenberry as the backup or a Questenberry-like player as the backup. And then if it doesn't work out with Petit Frere, then saying, okay, David Questenberry, you're back in to start. But John Robinson is not going to tip his hand, not because of us, but because of teams around the league. Because the Buffalo Bills play the Titans in week two this year, and if the Buffalo Bills get an inkling that Dylan Raiden sucks that bad, and since they get the same tape and even better tape than what Trevor watched on TV yesterday, they'll probably know, oh my God, are they a mess at right tackle. The last thing the Buffalo Bills are going to do is cut David Questenberry so the Titans can pick him up, when Buffalo's probably watching that same tape in which Trevor's saying the same things about Raiden's, and they're probably saying, oh, Lord, please let us line up Von Miller over this guy. But let's be real. The Titans have given Dylan Raiden's every opportunity. The Titans told us all we needed to know last year when during the season, outside of that one game at San Francisco, in which he didn't even play that well, but that one game against San Francisco where he didn't give up a sack and Vrabel barely complimented him after it was over, the Titans told us last season that he was no good. There was a game, I want to say it was the Sunday nighter against the Rams, but I could be mistaken, where Taylor Lewan was out and the Titans had an opening at left tackle and they played Bobby Hart, who they had signed off of Buffalo's practice squad. Again, maybe they go get Bobby Hart and put Bobby Hart at right tackle. But some random guy off the street, they went out and signed Bobby Hart, and they put Bobby Hart at tackle before they put Raiden's. And it was obvious then that, boy, they think this guy's not very good. In fact, I remember the second practice last year. No pads. Ola Adeniyi was rushing off the outside and was just going past Kendall Lamb and past Dylan Raiden's on every snap. And I turned to Joe Rexroad, and I said, these guys suck. And Joe was like, how can you tell without pads? I was like, man, I'm just telling you, they suck. And the next day, Vrabel was asked about right tackle and talked about Ty Sambrylo. And, hey, you know, he'll get healthy, and he'll be able to help us at tackle. Boy, what a mess. What a mess. Trevor does not like to criticize like that. He'll do it because that's the job and he knows it. But what a mess with Raidens. It's just time to admit it's a bust. Ian, you said it during the break. Maybe the Titans should see if they can play him at guard or, you know, make him some kind of valuable backup type player. But
he looks a little rigid out there, doesn't he? I don't know if it's the athleticism or the bend or the strength. Maybe it's a combination of all of them, but he looks, you know, a little upright, a little too upright.
He looks like he sucks. I mean, that's where we are. And last year, I said he needed a redshirt year, and they should have IR'd him. And then that way people say, oh, yeah, he hurt his elbow. That's why he's out or whatever. But then that way they could kind of grow him a little bit, and the expectation wouldn't be, man, you got deactivated for the Cincinnati game. What do you think? How does it feel? But instead, that's what they did. And he was inactive for the playoffs, and they've given him every opportunity. And I asked Trevor right there, what was the bad? It was funny because I asked about the line, and he said there was some good and there was some bad. The good, Corey Levin was really good. And I thought Corey Levin this and Corey Levin that. The good, Petit Frere, when he moved over to right tackle, I kind of liked what I saw, and that was pretty good. What was the bad, Trevor? Yeah, Raidens was very good. And, look, man. I don't know how many years Trevor played in the NFL. I think Trevor played in the NFL for like 12 years. And I believe Trevor played every spot on the line in the NFL. And he was a first-round draft choice. So you can say that I don't know what I'm talking about, but boy, Trevor, man. Woof. So, and it's bad, too. I've always said this. When somebody's good, and I can use radio hosts as an example. The thing about radio is it's a habit. Most people drive home around the same time every day, and that's for somebody who's doing afternoon drive like I am, that I want people to listen to the same show every day. That is why when something big is going on, I am on the air. There is no, training camp, I'm in there. That's why. Because I want people in the car, and I want them to build the habit of sports, Jared. That's what I want. That's the job. And I know this. There's a lot of people that listen to me for the first time, and they say, I hated you at first, and then I started liking you. It's an acquired taste. Bad? You all know bad radio. You hear bad radio a mile away. It's like one segment, and you're like, man. With me, it may be you don't like what I say. With bad radio, it's like, God, this sucks. It's boring. There's no direction. There's no topic development. It's so obvious right away. Bad is obvious. And Raidens' entire career so far has been bad, bad, bad. 49er game, bad, bad. And according to Trevor, it doesn't look like it's getting any better. I think it's just time to admit it what it is. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We will circle back to your Titans text on the program. But there is one little story I want to sneak in here on a Titans Monday. There is some college drama. Do you see this, Ian?
It doesn't involve a team up north? Slightly,
yes.
To the state up north? Yes, I have seen it.
Yes. Kentucky basketball fighting with Kentucky football. Wow. That's next. Delman and Company. Fireball Sin Whiskey goes down so smooth, and it tastes so great. That's right. The weekend is here. Football is back. There is so much to do, and the way to do that is with ice-cold Fireball Sin Whiskey. Why? Because Fireball Sin Whiskey goes down smooth, and it tastes so great. That's why Nashville, who started pumping Fireball Sin Whiskey out there, has made this whiskey so famous. Fireball Sin Whiskey. Unite tonight. Please do responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Sin Whiskey. I know it's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. I know it's we're reacting to the Titans preseason game. We got a bunch to get into. Chad Withrow in 10 minutes with his thoughts. But this story is too juicy that I can't not talk about it. I can't ignore it. So apparently Kyle Tucker of the Athletic wrote a story in which John Calipari is apparently fed up with the University of Kentucky and wants a practice basketball facility. Now, I know you guys don't give two craps about the Kentucky basketball facility, and neither do I. But in it, John Calipari basically admitted the obvious to everyone that Kentucky is a basketball school. Georgia is a football school. Alabama is a football school. And I would pull up the quote, but it's not important. That was the gist of it. And Mark Stoops got so mad. And he quote tweeted the tweet from Kyle Tucker in which Calipari correctly calls Georgia a football school. Although Georgia wouldn't be the best example because it took them forever to build an indoor practice facility. But Mark Stoops says, I thought we competed in the SEC and had the hashtag four straight bowl wins. And that led Kentucky players to jump on board, and they're talking about St. Peter's, and they're talking about how could Coach Cal say this, and we've won 10 games and all kinds of stuff. And so here's the drama. Kentucky football is mad at Kentucky basketball because John Calipari admitted the obvious, usually one of the things that is thought of by everybody but said by no one, that, you know, our school's not a football school. And the football people who see the very famous coach saying that our school's not a football school is looking at the rest of the SEC, and they're saying, well, how the hell am I supposed to recruit against Florida and Georgia and LSU and Tennessee? How the hell am I supposed to recruit against these guys when my basketball coach, who is the highest paid employee in the state and the most famous employee of the university, how am I supposed to recruit with that? And he's going to say that when we've won four straight bowl games and Kentucky basketball lost in the first round to St. Peter's. Let me say this. Calipari's right, Mark Stoops is wrong. And I know what Calipari said probably shouldn't have been said. But the reality is that John Calipari wants his basketball facility built. If John Calipari is telling Kyle Tucker in the Bahamas at the Athletic about how badly he wants his practice facilities built, it means that he's gone to the athletic director or president or both of them and has been begging for months for a basketball facility to be built. And every time they say, oh, coach, we'd like to, but I'm not sure. But Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director, he's a good man at Kentucky. And, yeah, I'm a Louisville guy, but I'll tell you, Mitch Barnhart, in my opinion, is a good man. About 5 years ago, it was Mitch Barnhart, me, and Floyd. And Mitch Barnhart was telling Floyd about how he had to come to Lexington because he had to see the new $100 million football facility. How many times, Ian, did Floyd talk about Kentucky football's dedication with that $100 million football facility?
Well, a fair amount.
It like stood out to him that, wow, you would spend $100 million on a football facility, which is the going rate for something like that. I say this because Calipari wants his facility too. It's Kentucky. Mark Stoops is wrong for a couple of reasons. The first reason Mark Stoops is wrong is because he needs to not pick a fight with Calipari. Here's the joy, in my opinion, of being a college football coach at a basketball school. And I know this because I watched Charlie Strong at a basketball school, Louisville, not understand this when he went to Texas, which is at a basketball school. You can win 7 games, 8 games, the occasional 9 games, get to a good bowl game like the Citrus Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, or get to a good bowl. Maybe you win the bowl. People don't care really if they win the bowl. They just want the experience of we played in the bowl. Unless they are, you know, Oklahoma, a football school, they just want to play in the bowl. That's it. And then the next year, 7-5, well, hey, our coach won 9 games last year. Way to go. At a football school, 8-4 is not good enough. At Georgia, 8-4 gets Mark Richt fired. At Tennessee, 8-4 back-to-back years, no trip to Atlanta, was enough to put Butch Jones essentially on the coach's version of death row. But that's our coach. So life's a two-way street. Mark Stoops may look at the rest of the SEC and may look at these other football schools and say, well, I don't get what Texas gets. Well, guess what? You don't have the pressure Texas has either. So maybe enjoy it. Also, Mark Stoops is a good coach. I've said this time and time again about Stoops. I like Stoops fine. I'm not sure if he likes me or whatever. I have no idea. But I never considered Mark Stoops to be the smartest guy in the world. Mark Stoops makes an insane amount of money to coach Kentucky football. And people in Kentucky care about Kentucky football, but they don't care about it like they care about Kentucky basketball. I know that. You know that. Cal knows that. He knows that. Everybody knows that. Just enjoy the gravy train, babe. Don't get too worked up one way or another. And the other thing, too, is that if Mark Stoops had never said anything about this, the drama is not that Cal said the obvious, that Kentucky is a basketball school and not a football school. The obvious is that now it's a drama because everybody's looking at these two coaches fighting each other. And that's what sells tickets. That, when they say sex sells, the Fox, as a TV channel, built an entire channel off of this, along with the NFL, which is, hey, we're just going to stick the Simpsons and Al Bundy and all the crazy stuff on TV. That's what we like. Coaches fighting each other. Look at the drama. Cal's right. They're a basketball school. No crap. It's Kentucky. Lance is up next. Phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Go ahead, Lance.
You know what this sounds like, Jared?
What's that?
It sounds like Bear Bryant, Adolph Rupp. Back, the only time Kentucky was worth a dang until Stoops got there was when Bear Bryant won the SEC. The only time they've ever won the SEC. Poor old Bear Bryant got a wristwatch from winning the SEC.
So
the same year.
Sure.
Same year Rupp won the SEC, he got a Cadillac. The next year, Bear Bryant coached at A&M.
And see, that's the difference, Lance, I hear you. You made your point. Thank you for your call. I will say this about that, about A&M and the whole transfer Bear Bryant with Kentucky football will pay Mark Stoops. This is not the same era of the Bear Bryant era of the – they will pay. They will pay whatever it – if Texas and God – I mean, if Texas offered Mark Stoops, oh, my God. But if that happened, if they came out and they offered Mark Stoops a bunch of money, then the next thing you would know, I would know, is Texas or Kentucky would match it. But – the reason Bear Bryant went to A&M and then Alabama is because of the money and because of the winning the championships and everything else. Well, all those things now can be accomplished at Kentucky. They just don't care as much. But when they don't care as much, you don't get fired as fast. Tom, quickly, up next on Kentucky. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, I'm from Kentucky, and I tell you what we do. Care about our football. We're tired of being a doormat like we have for so many years. And we're
yeah, but you don't care about it like you care about basketball.
Some are that way, some are not that way. I mean, we care about both sports. And
I'll tell you this, Tom. I spent two years, thank you for your call, I spent 2 years on the radio in Louisville, Kentucky. Tons of Kentucky fans there. It's about 50-50 Louisville and Kentucky. And guess what? All those people, maybe not every single one of them, but most of them care about basketball over football. And everybody knows it. And that's why Mark Stoops got mad, because Mark Stoops knows it too. Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, his reaction to Malik Willis's debut last night, what Treylon Burks and co. didn't do. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.